Xylene Voices features interviews with today's top industry analysts, consultants, and practitioners in the field of learning. Our experts discuss key issues affecting the evolution of training and the ramifications on the way we learn and how we perform.
Our guest for today's podcast is Dr. Andrea Edmondson, Global Learning Strategist for eWorld Learning, a consultancy dedicated to the globalization and internationalization of workforce training and development. She is the author of two pioneering books on the subject titled Cases on Culturally Appropriate E-Learning and Globalized E-Learning Cultural Challenges. Dr. Edmondson is also the president of the Global E-Learning Community, a professional association for those whose work encompasses learning, culture, and technology. And we're thrilled to have her share insight with us today on the topic of culturally appropriate instructional design. Dr. Edmondson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, let's kick off this podcast. Andrea, you say that when we design anything, including e-learning, it's culturally embedded with our cultural preferences and worldview. Can you explain what you mean by that and what the implications are for trainers and instructional designers?
Yeah, and you know, I talk about e-learning a lot, but I'm also talking about training. It just so happens that some of these things are a little bit, you know, magnified in e-learning, which I'll give you an example of later. But what happens is we trust our way of thinking and our way of approaching things to be similar to everyone else's. And we don't do it intentionally, but you know, some of the simplest things to understand are, for example, language. You know, we just use words that we're comfortable with and we assume everyone else understands what they mean. And that could be business jargon, that could be colloquialisms, all kinds of things make it more difficult for people to understand. But some of the things that are even less obvious would be perhaps what are the learning styles and the learning preferences of people in another country or culture. You know, a lot of places depend on, for example, lecture format and rote memorization, and they're not used to problem solving and analytical type thinking in training courses or perhaps in e-learning. And so that can create a barrier. Values is a big one. In the United States, we, like for leadership training, we value people who take charge, who are leaders, who can make things happen, who are willing to take risks. Whereas in other cultures, like perhaps Asian ones, a leader is the one who's wise, who does things for the benefit of the group, who avoids conflict, and things like that. So if you can just take those three types of examples and imagine, we designed an American leadership course and we sent it to an Asian country, culture, or part of our business, we're gonna have some problems.
How do people gain that knowledge to find out what the values are, what the jargon is in other countries? I suppose it's easy if you have a big, you know, worldwide company and offices in all those places, but how do people go about gathering that knowledge? Does that make sense what I'm asking?
Yes, it does. And it's interesting because, you know, we hardly know our own cultures completely, let alone someone else's, and let alone the multitudes of cultures around the world. So truthfully, it's a research project. And what we have to do is we have to have a basic understanding of the kinds of things that we should be looking for. And then once we know the kinds of things that we should be looking for, we have to do some research. And, you know, it's not that far from a regular needs assessment that people would do for learners, but we just have to add a different twist to it. And then once we think we know what might be a cultural challenge or an issue, we have to look at two things. Is it critical to learning? Because it may not be critical. But if it is, then we also need to find a way to adapt our training, our e-learning course. And lastly, we need to check with the learners to make sure that we're on target. Because sometimes they might say, oh, no, that's no big deal. You don't have to change that. So really, truthfully, it is a research project. It's a needs assessment. It's just got a cultural twist to it.
That's interesting. And so it sounds to me like the content development process becomes even more iterative and review-oriented than before.
Oh, you have so hit the word, iterative.
Well, that's good to know. Okay.
Because that's what you do. You're looking at your learners, and then you look at your course, whether it's existing or proposed. And then you go back and you look at your learners, and then you go back to the course. And you have to do that constantly.
So could you define for us what is, or maybe you've done this already, but can you define what is culturally appropriate instructional design?
Well, you did kind of lead me into that on that last explanation. So culturally appropriate instructional design is making sure that however you design your training or e-learning course, that it is going to accommodate not only the learner's preferences and such, but that you're going to get, and this is a key phrase, equitable learning outcomes. Let's just assume your course has been designed in the United States. You want people who take the course in the U.S. and can pass successfully and take it in a certain amount of time. You want the people in another country or culture or your employees in another part of the world to be able to have the same results. Can they take the course in a certain amount of time and achieve the same desired results? So it goes back to what I said, iterative process. Look at the course, look at the learners. What is critical? What affects learning and learning outcomes? And then decide what needs to be adapted.
Okay, so you touched, that's perfect. So you had touched on this earlier about, what in the first question, but can you expand a little bit? What are the ramifications of culturally inappropriate instructional design?
Well, the first one would be just lack of participation. and this is where definitely most people can understand, the training environment versus the e-learning environment where it's different. If you're in a classroom and you're training a group of people from another country or culture, you get visual cues. You see people not participating. You see people not looking at you. You see discomfort, hesitation. But if you're doing an e-learning course, especially if it's self-paced, you don't know what's going on the other end for the learners. So what you're risking is not only lack of participation, but people could just out and out reject the course, or they could take the course, but they use valuable resources, use extra time, et cetera, to take the course, or at the end, the outcomes just aren't the same. If you're teaching an American leadership program to learners in China and they can't turn around and apply it in their environment, they've not only not gained any skills or knowledge that they can use, but you probably have even alienated them.
So what is the, and this kind of drops into the next question, so what, one of the things that we don't do in learning typically is measure training outcomes to the bottom line of the company. And you've mm-hmm. gone through this, and you've said this multiple times, that if you don't address cultural differences, that you can expect to lose money, alienate learners and business partner. So which are things, examples that you just gave. So what's the correlation between culturally appropriate instructional design and the bottom line? Can you give us specific examples of that?
Well, there's a dollar amount one on my website that is, and I just point that out because you know what? Very few people will fess up to actually having made the mistake that cost them money. Mm-hmm. But this one in particular was a online driving course, and it was so culturally inappropriate that they lost billions of dollars revamping and rewriting the course. But on the other hand, sometimes you lose money by just not getting business. For example, I've worked with one company who does training on a particular topic. They sell subscriptions to their training courses, and they're trying to go international. And when they took these courses into other countries and cultures, they were rejected. They said, these mean nothing to us. They're inappropriate. They don't fit our context. Our learners will not use this material. And then the third way, other than just out and out losing money or not ever gaining the business, is you can lose customers. For example, say you're teaching your customer service people how to handle people with disabilities on a call. Well, how disabilities are handled and treated in other countries and cultures are very different from the United States. And so if we're not training people to be culturally appropriate when they deal with situations, they can alienate customers. So that's another way that you actually lose business, the bottom line.
Yeah, each example that you gave was more devastating than the next, so than the previous, I mean. So it was like, okay, so let's end this podcast with, let's end this on a high note. So how does one go about creating culturally appropriate learning? What are some best practices that ought to be considered?
Well, I mentioned that it's an iterative process and it's research. And when I did my doctoral research, I created a model called the cultural adaptation process. And I use this all the time. I give it to people. It's available all over my website and free and in the literature, whatever. But it's basically a checklist because you don't know what you don't know. And so it is a checklist that creates an iterative process, and it shows people what do you need to look at on your course and in your learners, in your learners' world. You know, what kind of learning environment did they grow up? What are some of the national cross-cultural dimensions that are associated with their countries? What are social and gender roles? All of those types of things that we might not think about. So my biggest push is follow a process so that you don't overlook anything, and always include the end users. We are so bad about wanting to engage our end users in our process.
Andrea, I think that's a great way to end this podcast, and I think I think it's a great time for something like this. As you see where the future workforce is headed, things are becoming more and more global. So yeah. If organizations can't get their training on board, I think it's going to have a devastating impact on them. So, Andrea, that ends today's podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoy getting the opportunity to talk about it.
You can learn more about Dr. Andrea Edmondson by visiting her website at www.eworldlearning.com. There you'll find access to her books, publications, and other resources. You can find a link to this site at the Xylene Voices homepage, located at www.xylene.com/podcast.